Network, proudly presents the Jay's Blade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as special guests. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us into the show in such style. I am indeed Jay Flemmer, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Happy December, everybody. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. We had a wonderful time ourselves, both here and on the show, and at home with family and friends, and looking forward to the rest of the Christmas holidays, or whatever holiday you might celebrate, and then to get the new year started with a bang. We're going to wrap up the year with a couple of our very favorite guests that we've had on the show before. Later on, Steve Smyers, the president of the American Society of Golf Course Architects, is going to come on the show and not only talk about all of the great courses that he's been working on this year and playing in his various travels, but he's going to also talk about the new initiative that the Society of Architects and the USGA have put together with regards to sustainability and public golf and making it cheaper and faster and more fun for all of us to play. But right now, we're going to come into the show with another one of our old favorites. He's one of the most gifted and funny writers out there. Graduate of one of the best schools in the country, William & Mary, and then got his master's in creative writing at the University of Memphis, teaches down in Georgia, but you can read him on Yahoo Sports. Please welcome back Jay Busby. Hey, Jay, welcome back to Jay's Place.
How are you, brother? Good name. Good to be back.
Yes, it is indeed. You know, I always joke around with my friends when, you know, the wife is pregnant. I'll say, you know what a great name for a boy is? And they'll, like, lean forward, listening intently, and I'll say, Jay.
Absolutely. I concur 100%.
You know, I'll tell you a funny one, though. This one happens to me all the time, and I wonder if it happens to you, too. One of my email addresses starts with Jay Music Law. And, you know, frequently, all too frequently, people are like, I sent you an email. Oh, I didn't get it. Oh, you didn't get it. Well, I sent it to Jay Music Law. Well, how did you spell Jay Music Law? J-M-U-S-I-C-L-E-W. And I have to say to them, you know, if I was Bob Music Law, you wouldn't do that. If I was Paul Music Law, you would. Okay, but why do you got to go, really? I mean, you know, do people do that to you, too?
You get that. Yeah, you got to make sure that you have it exactly spelled out for people. J-A-Y.
Yeah, I've learned that, you know. So, but it's great to have you on the show. It was wonderful to talk to you back in the U.S. Open. And it's been a watershed year for golf in two ways. One of it is that we've seen the passing of the torch on the golf course, you know, to this new generation. We have new heroes to root for, led right now by Jordan Spieth. And, you know, his two majors, and he's a young kid, and he's just looking like he's going to rise into the stratosphere like a meteor. And at the same time, you have the denouement of Tiger Woods. Specifically, first back in the early fall, notably Gay went on Golf Channel, and basically all but came right out and said that Tiger thinks that this injury, you know, if it's not the end of his career, certainly is the end of his chase for Jack's record. Recent interview with Robert Thompson in Time magazine and a couple of other interviews at the Hero World Challenge seem to strongly hint at it. So give us your thoughts on how you read the Tiger Woods situation, and then talk about, do you think that golf is going to be in a funk in the doldrums, or do you think that the new guys are going to be just as good for the game as the last bunch of old heroes?
Well, think about the stages of grief, you know, the denial and so forth until you finally reach the point of, you know, anger, until you finally reach the point of acceptance. And that's what it has to be for Tiger. He had to be in denial for so long that he was not going to catch this record. I think that he has finally reached the point of acceptance. And to me, it does not make him any less of a golfer if he stops at 14. You know, he might maybe have a Jack in 1986 moment at Augusta, or perhaps at a Lynx course at one of the British Opens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm not sure about you, but I imagine you think that his days of winning a U.S. Open or even a PGA Championship are well behind him. So it just, it seems like maybe he's got one more major in him. Having four or more, I cannot see that happening.
You know, you raise a terrific bunch of points there, and there's a whole couple of things I want to talk about. Let's start with when you said about Tiger in denial about not catching Jack's record. I got to thinking about that great scene in the movie Gladiator with Russell Crowe. Did you see it, that movie?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. There's a scene at the beginning when the Germanic barbarians cut off the head of the messenger and send him back headless on the horse, and come out and basically say in whatever Germanic barbarian language, no one's, you know, let's fight. Quintus looks at Maximus and says, a people should know when they're conquered. And Maximus looks back and says, would you, Quintus? Would I? And I thought long and hard about that. Where is the line between giving up too early and staying too long?
Yeah, that's always the question, isn't it? And different athletes answer it in different ways. Barry Sanders walked away from the game when he still had something in the game of football, when he still had something to give. Many other athletes that we could name, you know, even look at Kobe Bryant, hanging on for just one more run, one more shot at a ring, one more paycheck, which is not, in these days, not an inconsiderable question. You know, you wonder. You wonder how much more guys like this have left in them. Jeff Gordon just quit NASCAR, leaving after a championship race. He was in the race for a championship right until the final laps. Peyton Manning might be out of football before the end of the season because of his neck injury, hobbling around at Mile High Stadium in Denver. So it's a question that each individual athlete has to answer. I've never been real comfortable with fans or media saying he should quit, he should walk away, because that's very easy for us to say, hey, you know, what you've been doing your whole life, give it up, walk away, screw you. But, you know, at some point you just have to acknowledge that you're hurting no one but yourself and you're helping no one by staying on any longer. I think Tiger Woods will be welcome at any golf course that he comes to, but as for being competitive, that seems to be well behind him now.
How do you think, you know, Tiger resolved these issues in his head? Because there was a time when I thought that we would see Tiger out there at age 70 drinking and sure wearing Depends undergarments and still trying to get one more, you know.
Sure,
and
sure.
So that's why when I heard these words, there was a bit of a surprising finality. More because, you know, not because Tiger's stupid, but because Tiger, you know, won't give up. But,
yeah,
you know, so how do you think he came to grips with this?
Well, I think that it's the same way that we all come to grips with every one of the big issues in our life. It just is inexorable, and there's no way to escape it. His swing is not getting better. His back is not getting better. He's not suddenly developing greater touch on the greens. It just has not happened. It will not happen. And at some point, you can rail against that all you want, but at some point, you're just banging your head against a brick wall, and you have to accept it. And I believe that may be what the difference is between now and all those press conferences that everyone kind of laughed through when Tiger was saying, you know, it's the process. I'm right around the corner. It's going to happen very soon. I expect to compete. And everyone sort of laughed at him, or not laughed, just was kind of like, yeah, right, thanks, Tiger. But between that point and now, he's acknowledged the finality of truth.
That was one, at least for Tiger, that for me was the sort of Maximus and Quintus Germanic barbarian moment there, you know, where you started to wonder if the answer to the question was, well, yes, there is a point in which you should recognize that you conquered. I'll give you another example, an analogy in music. The Grateful Dead. Now, all of my friends are going to instantly revoke my membership in, you know, being a deadhead and a hippie, you know, a reformed hippie. You know, I saw 152 shows, and that was before Jerry died. And I loved that band. You know, they got me through my college years. But, you know, there comes a point where you know you got to hang it up. And hearing Phil Lesh absolutely butcher St. Stephen and Eyes of the World and God knows what other song with what warbling he calls singing. Okay, it was no less a person than the band's own photographer, Jeff Kravitz, who wrote an honest and open-hearted letter saying, you know, Phil, these are our memories too, and they're the last ones. We don't want to have to fast forward through the lyrics to get to the jam. You know, so to you, do you think that Tiger also made this decision for really good reasons, like his kids and his family and his health?
Oh, sure. I think that that's part of it. I think that, your world opens up. When you stop focusing on one thing, you start to realize what else is around you in the rest of the world. You know, and Tiger had focused on nothing but the 300 yards down the fairway in front of him or the flag stick in front of him. He had focused on nothing to the side. And I think that now that he has the opportunity to take a deep breath, that he's been forced to the sidelines, he can see that, hey, you know what? It's not so bad hanging out with your kids. It's not so bad having a quiet night at home. It's not so bad necessarily not being on the tour all the time. I mean, certainly there will be plenty that he would miss, but I think that what he experiences is what everyone experiences once they get a little bit of time to look around from their obsession and realize the obsession is not the entire world. And so, yeah, hopefully for his sake, and I can't speak for him, obviously, but hopefully for his sake, he finds some kind of peace and some kind of security in this new world that he has to deal with.
Well, like you said, there'll be a lot that he'll miss, but there's also a lot that he can do. Okay, just like when a rock band hits their sell-by date, they all go become producers or record executives or A&R people. You know, so too, Tiger can focus on his golf course architecture and building.
Or he can play State Fairs, you know. He could do the rock band version of playing State Fairs. You know, what if Tiger Woods were to pop up in a small tournament? That'd be amazing. And he wouldn't have to shoot very well. It'd be fun for him and for everyone involved.
You know, I'm sure that he could find ceremonial golf fun, although I do remember how Tom Watson said he so loathed ceremonial golf because of the competition factor. You know, and as an athlete myself, you know, there's something about when you show up and knowing that you're not going to be a factor that is kind of deflating, you know. When I show up for a 16,000-person road race and the guy next to me, a pal of mine that's actually 3 years my younger, I know he's going to come in fifth in the race and I know I'm going to come in 3,000th. It doesn't stop me from running anyway or running hard, but it's definitely a reality check. But,
sure.
You know, now let's move forward, though, and let's move golf forward. I have been saying it for years that golf is going to be just fine. And if there was any exhibit A to put that evidence in crystal sharp relief, it was this year, which was remarkably exciting. We have the new guys coming in and playing and winning big tournaments and doing it in style. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what impressed you the most this year and how optimistic are you for the future of the game?
Yeah, I am optimistic. I think that the game has plenty of room to grow, actually has tons of room to grow. I think the question, obviously, is how do you continue to appeal to new people? Golf is not a sport that is suited well for, and I hate to use this phrase, but the millennial mind or the millennial style of life. Golf requires a huge commitment. Golf requires, if you're going to play it right, if you're going to play it with all the trimmings, you're talking 5 to 6 hours. And not that expense is a primary consideration, but it is out there for a lot of people. So I think that golf needs to, there are two separate tracks, which is kind of interesting and unlike any other sport. You've got the recreational side of golf, which is the individuals playing, and then you've got the professional side of golf, which is watching the guys on TV. So we'll set the recreational aside for now, because that's a whole different question. But in terms of the professional side, yeah, you've got 7 or 8 guys who will draw your attention, and 3 or 4 of them are going to be on the leaderboard every single week at the top of the leaderboard. And what impressed me the most, Jordan Spieth, hands down. I mean, the guy instantly became one of my favorite people to interview, instantly became one of my favorite people to watch just because of the guy's presence and charisma and talent and everything. It's like he arrived on the stage completely formed, and it's very rare to see that in this stage of American sports.
You know, I still believe that people, the great American sportsmen, that's hominous sporticus americanum in Latin, really like their heroes to be humble and hardworking and grateful. You know, it's like we laugh at and we point at and we marvel at, you know, the loud and colorful ones. But we admire, respect, and are inspired by the classy and the gracious ones. And that's what impressed me the most about Spieth, was not just how he won, but the way he won. And it seems like he's got a good team around him. and that kids will rally to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely something in his favor. I'm not necessarily opposed to a little showmanship. I have no problem with what, in the world of football, a guy like Cam Newton does, because sports is hard. You know this. Sports is a difficult endeavor. Anything that you're doing is a difficult endeavor, and I don't have a problem with a little bit of celebration, a little bit of excessive celebration. And Spieth let that go a couple of times. I think it humanizes him to throw out a cuss word every now and then, to pump his fist, to really celebrate. I don't think that kind of stuff should be capped off or should be dissuaded, because that's exactly the kind of thing that turns people off from the game. But yeah, in terms of the fact that we could say all of these different things about Spieth is indicative of how many different roles he can play in the sport. He can be the young representative. He can also stay in touch. You know, he's got that Texas twang to him, and he's got that style to keep him in touch with golf's older fans who can remember firsthand the days of Palmer and Nicklaus. So Spieth has a lot on his shoulders, and I think the benefit of who he is that he's able to handle that very well.
Yes, he's remarkably well-spoken, he's polite, and he's generous with his time. And it was also nice to see a guy who won his first major also win the next one. It's so rare to see that, because normally when a guy wins his first major, no matter what it is, there's all the hoopla that follows. And for Spieth to not only be able to go to Chambers Bay with all of that on him, but win and hold off a hard charging bunch of guys, you know, and on that golf course on that day under those conditions, that spoke exceptionally well, I think, for his longevity. He also plays well on all four surfaces that are integral in the Grand Slam. Okay, he can play well on a fast and firm links course. He can play well on a shot maker's course. He can play well at Augusta, and he plays well on a rank and file, PGA Tour stops that sometimes get frequented by the PGA. He's well rounded, and he has breadth and depth.
Yes, absolutely. And I was fortunate enough to be in Scotland right there on 16 when he had that long putt. They hold that long putt on the 70th hole of the Open Championship. And, I mean, that was, you know, letting a little bit of journalistic impartiality slide. I was with a couple of other journalists. We were yelling pretty much as loud as anybody else because
you were rooting for the story.
Absolutely. I mean, it was not necessarily rooting for him so much as the story, but I was also just – it's also just an appreciation of the unbelievable talent that this guy has and the composure. And unfortunately for him, you know, and for the story, he fell apart on the very next hole. But the fact that he was able to do that for so long, to stay in contention, to pull himself back into contention at tournament after tournament, to hang in there when he had the lead, to run down the leader when he didn't, that just speaks volumes about him as a player and as an individual. And, you know, his mindset is something that all athletes, regardless of sport, would do well to replicate. And that's something that I always am fascinated with, is how a golfer handles pressure at that most crucial of moments, and golf has a way of really clarifying that.
Well, you know, they say you can see the mettle of a man, M-E-T-T-L-E, not in his very best moments, but in his very worst. You know, the best example of that being the grace and class of Phil Mickelson after he had that horrific loss at Wingfoot, to walk out there and face us and talk to us for 42 minutes and answer every question and not offer a single evasive answer. But while we're on the subject of St. Andrews and the Open Championship, let's turn very quickly to Zach Johnson. I mean, always one of my favorites because he gives you honest, good, thorough, deep answers. He's a smart guy, but he's a fun guy. You know, he loves his rock and roll music just as much as he loves, you know, his Christian Bible meetings. You know, and you always know what you're getting when you talk to him, and he's generous with his time. It was wonderful to see him win. And it was also wonderful to shut up all of the naysayers who said, you know, he never validated his Masters victory. I'm not really sure how much I'd buy into this validation thing. So two questions for you. One, tell us a little bit about your impressions of Zach and his win at St. Andrews. And then tell us a little bit globally about your concept of validation in sports.
Yeah, I mean, the win at St. Andrews was really something special for Zach Johnson. I mean, I think that he won that by being steady, and he won that. He also was the beneficiary of some absolutely ideal weather conditions for him. I remember looking at the leaderboard. I think it was maybe even – well, we lost most of Saturday, so it was Sunday that we were looking at it, and we realized, you know, he's gone out early. He's managed to put a low number on the board. I think it was 7-under. And we were looking at that, and we're thinking, you know, once the afternoon and the wind hits, that could look really good. We thought this, you know, 36 holes before the end of the tournament, he could really be in good shape, and that was exactly what happened. That does not take anything away from what he did. He still had to shoot that 7-under on that course. And he was such a classy winner. He did everything he needed to do. You're exactly right. He's the kind of guy, he may not be the theatrical celebrity that Jordan Spieth is, but he's exactly the kind of champion that you want to see out of golf. Talented and focused and hardworking and doing everything that you want to see a champion do. As for validation, I'm with you. Anybody the only person that I would accept saying a single major win isn't validated is somebody who's won more than one major. And anybody who's won more than one major knows how tough it is. So that's a kind of a ridiculous complaint to say that any major win is not validated. You know, this is not a putt-putt competition. You still got to win all 4 days. So I have no problem saying that he would have been just fine, and he would have, you know, maybe not a Hall of Fame level golfer, but he would have been just fine in terms of his golf legacy if all he had was that green jacket. But he's got a claret jug to go with it now, and so it just further solidifies his standing as one of the best golfers playing right now.
Yeah, and he's had longevity in his career. He's been to several Ryder Cups and President's Cups. You know, I think people sometimes get down on him because he doesn't have as sparkling a record in the Ryder Cup, and so they kind of, you know, that sort of adds in their mind to their argument that, you know, he really isn't all that great or he has to validate something.
Right.
You know, but he's won some big tough tournaments besides, you know, his two majors. He's made a contribution, and he's a leader in the locker room, you know, at those events. He's kind of come a long way from the days when he and Tiger were, you know, having discussions about what was put on the television in the hotel room, you know. Now,
right.
You know, the younger kids look up to him. So one more major to talk about, and that would be the late season charge and surge of Jason Day. Now, you were talking about, you know, the guy showing a little bit of color from time to time. Perhaps the most colorful thing to happen at the PGA Championship was when Day uncorked that 411-yard drive.
Right.
You heard that right, people. Okay. And he was so far past speed that Spieth just turned around and looked at him and you know, held up his hands and sort of gave him a WTS kind of look. And Jason pointed to his bicep, which is kind of big, and pointed to it and flexed it at him. And that's when, you know, that's when Jordan said, man, I'm in for a long day today. So it was a remarkable resurgence. You know, tell us a little bit about what you thought covering Jason towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, he's always such a humble guy, such a sparkling guy, but he's, you know, he's got that awareness of where he came from. As you know, his origins are extraordinarily humble, and he seems, you know, saying that an athlete is grateful is almost patronizing to them, you know, because it's like, you know, patting them on the head for doing a good job. But the guy seems to have a clear understanding of who he is, what a silly thing it is for him to be making millions of dollars hitting a ball into a hole. I mean, and that simple fact seems lost on a lot of players. But Day seems like exactly the kind of guy that you want to have going forward. You want to have a number of rivals, all of whom are capable of beating each other at one time or another. Now, you know, for theatrical purposes, you might like them to be a little bit more adversarial to each other, but that's not what's going to happen in golf. You're going to have guys cheering each other on and pumping each other up, and they're going to be, you know, it's going to be kind of a little more gentlemanly pursuit, a little more gentleman, a little less world wrestling entertainment. So, from that standpoint, Jason Day is an ideal representative for golf going forward, along with Rory, along with Spieth, and along with Ricky Fowler, or whoever else you want to bring and put in on that current Rushmore, Jason Day certainly belongs there.
Now, one thing we can't talk about that PGA Championship without talking about this.
Right.
20 under. Okay, record, and not just him. Okay, that is supposed to be a hard golf course. designed by the mad scientist, the Bela Lugosi himself of golf architecture, Pete Dye. Okay, and they played it like a Stradivarius. And there were something like a record number of 400-plus yard drives and drives over 350 yards. So how did they completely dismember this golf course? And do you think we have to rein the equipment in a little bit?
Yeah, I was about to say, it's not just the course, it's the equipment. You know, Jack Nicklaus has been railing about this for years, and I think that he's on to something where you have, between equipment and conditioning, you have players who have outstripped the limit of courses to contain them. And if you go and try to sculpt the course to contain them, you get like what we had at Chambers Bay, where you'll recall Gary Player was adamantly opposed to that kind of monstrous course and the way that it was set up. So, yeah, it's that fine line. I mean, I've never been a big fan of the USGA going and deliberately making holes tough during the U.S. Open, you know, putting a hole on the side of a hill just to try and prove a point. I've never been a big fan of that, but by the same token, you don't want it to turn into a putting exhibition either, you know, like a video game with a cheat code enabled. So it's a balancing act where you've got to figure out where that line is, and obviously, in this case, the PGA of America erred too far on the generous side of that line.
No, you don't want it to become a video game. You especially don't want it to become South Park's version of EA Sports 2010. Oh, here come the cops, Kenny. We got to hit X to lie to the cops.
Exactly.
This is Shane Plummer. You're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We're here with our special guest, Jay Busby. We're going to take a one-minute break, and we will be back right after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.